From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. It is showtime for the Republicans. Yesterday, they raised the curtain on their plan to replace the Affordable Care Act. Early reviews are not favorable from either side of the aisle, and everyone is still waiting to find out how much this replacement plan will cost. This hour, On Point, the GOP and the future of American health care. You can join us on air or online. Are you on board with the new Republican plan or not? Do you even understand what's being proposed here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from Washington is Noam Levy, national health care correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Noam, always great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Good to be with you.
So let's play first here. Vice President Mike Pence yesterday afternoon saying President Trump and the administration support the American Health Care Act as a framework for reform.
We're certainly open to improvements and to recommendations in the legislative process. But this is the bill, and the president supports the American Health Care Act and looks forward to working very directly with leadership of the House and Senate to move this bill.
Noam Levy, this is a complicated and a complex overhaul. We'll unpack it here today. But first, give us the reaction to the House Republican plan from both sides of the aisle.
Well, I think you hit it on the head in your lead-in. The bill has not gotten a particularly warm reception from either Democrats, which is to be expected, or many conservative Republicans who have criticized the law for not going far enough, or the proposal, I should say, in not going far enough to roll back the Affordable Care Act. One other important group of folks who are weighing in are advocates representing patients, doctors, hospitals, all of which have come out very strongly against the House bill.
So I want to help understand the important pieces of this House plan. But first, here is a member of the House Freedom Caucus. They held a press conference on the Obamacare replacement legislation yesterday. This is Republican South Carolina Congressman Mark Sanford, who has come out against the bill and said Republicans should not lower standards simply because a Republican is in the White House.
You look at something like the refundable tax credit. Is that a lowering of the bar? I mean, it was Ronald Reagan that said that the closest thing to eternal life is a government program. Well, guaranteed eternal life in government is an entitlement. And what we're talking about here is a new entitlement.
All right, let's start with that point with the individual mandate. That is gone under the Republican House plan, replaced with the system of tax credits that the senator refers to there, which induce people to buy insurance on the open market. Noam, explain that for us.
Well, let's start with where we are with the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act has basically two mechanisms for guaranteeing coverage to people. One is Medicaid, which is the 50-year-old program for low-income Americans. The other is a series of subsidies, tax subsidies, that help low- and moderate-income Americans who don't get health insurance through an employer to buy health plans on these marketplaces that Obamacare created. The House bill, I guess we can talk about the tax credit first, doesn't completely scrap those subsidies. Instead, it replaces those subsidies with a new system of tax assistance, which in general is less generous than the current law, but nonetheless still provides some measure of financial assistance. And that's the issue that is troubling so many conservative Republicans who see the opportunity to roll back Obamacare as an opportunity to stop the government subsidizing so many Americans' health insurance.
Okay, so we'll take a deep dive into each of these points throughout the hour, but you mentioned Medicaid. The House bill would also roll back the expansion of Medicaid. What about that? What does that mean for people in states who have Medicaid?
So it probably doesn't mean great things. The Obamacare provided hundreds of billions of dollars of additional federal aid to states to allow them to expand eligibility for Medicaid. Medicaid historically was a program that primarily served poor children, pregnant women, poor elderly, and the disabled. Left out oftentimes were childless adults, low-income childless adults. The Affordable Care Act allowed states to provide that additional coverage to that group of Americans, and Medicaid is done the most of anything to expand coverage over the last couple of years. What the GOP plan does is two things, basically. Number one, it rolls back that federal aid, as you mentioned. So states would be in a situation where they would have to decide whether or not they want to pick up the tab to continue to cover these populations that gain coverage. The other and potentially even more consequential change that Republicans are proposing is a change in the basic formula that the federal government uses to support states. So Medicaid historically has been a program that's been funded by both states and the federal government. What the Republicans want to do is essentially cap how much the federal government pays states. Again, the effect of that would be to leave states with a choice. If their costs rose more quickly than this cap allowed, they would be left to decide whether or not they want to continue offering coverage to people, whether they want to cap the benefits, whether they want to roll back the number of people who are eligible. So in the long run, I think most experts who've looked at this believe that probably millions of low-income Americans would see their coverage jeopardized.
Also under this plan, people who let their insurance coverage lapse would face a significant penalty. Insurers could increase their premiums by about 30%. Tell us about that part of this.
So this is essentially the replacement for the insurance mandate. The requirement that Americans have insurance in Obamacare has always been the most unpopular part of the law. And the law currently requires people to have insurance, and if they don't have insurance, then they're subject to a tax penalty, a penalty when they file their taxes. The reason for this arrangement, unpopular as it is the belief by insurance experts and others that in order for insurance to work, you have to find a way to convince younger, healthier people to buy insurance even when they don't necessarily need to use a doctor. To solve the problem of getting rid of this, Republicans have proposed this alternative arrangement. And under this alternative arrangement, instead of a tax penalty, people who didn't maintain coverage continuously would be subject to this 30% penalty. This isn't optional. The law says that insurers shall do this. So if you let your insurance lapse because you lose your job, for example, for more than 2 months, and then you go to apply to get a new health plan, you're going to pay a 30% premium over and above what the normal monthly cost of that health plan would be.
I see. House Republicans are keeping a couple of the more popular provisions of the Affordable Care Act, right? You can't cancel coverage for a pre-existing condition, and young people can stay on their parents' health plans until the age of 26.
That's correct.
Anything else that's the same?
There are a number of other important things that can't be changed right now, some of which may or may not be changed in the future. These include one of the important things that Obamacare did was prohibit health insurers from putting lifetime and annual caps on the amount of coverage that they would provide. Patients, particularly very sick patients, would sometimes run up against these caps, find themselves on the hook for major medical bills that weren't covered. So that stays. The other thing that's important to note that stays for the moment is a series of requirements that Obamacare put on health insurers that they all cover a basic set of benefits. This was a really revolutionary part of the current law. And what this meant was that when consumers went to go buy a health insurance plan, they could be assured that that health insurance plan would cover 10 basic sets of benefits. Some of these are pretty obvious, like hospital care. Others, like prescription drugs, were oftentimes left out of plans beforehand. Mental health services is another thing that all health insurance plans now have to cover. Republicans aren't getting rid of that in the House Republican plan, in large part because the budget rules that kind of govern the process that's being used to advance this legislation don't allow the removal of these essential health benefit requirements at the moment. But Republicans have signaled very strongly and said explicitly that they want to get rid of essential health benefits down the road. They just can't use this current process to do it.
So the elephant in the room is the cost of all this, Noam Levy. When do we get the numbers?
Well, we don't know for sure, although it appears maybe early next week. As you know, the Congressional Budget Office is a scorekeeper in Washington that lawmakers rely on to judge much pieces of legislation cost, and importantly, what the impact will be on health insurance coverage in the case of a health care bill. Republicans are making this very unusual step of moving ahead today with committee hearings about the bill when there's been no independent analysis of what the impact of this bill could be. Maybe we'll see it next week. The Republicans are promising that there will be some score, as it's called, before the full House votes on this, but it just underscores how rapidly this process is moving forward.
I think it's fair to say that a lot of Americans did not understand Obamacare. President Obama himself admitted that the messaging around that was not good. What is the Republican plan to roll all of this out, to roll out their version of health care in a clear and understandable way?
I'm not sure we know the answer to that question. It is certainly true that Obamacare developed through a very complex process that left a lot of Americans scratching their heads. One thing that's important to remember, though, about that process is that because it was so long and complicated, the legislation was subject to a great deal of scrutiny. Tim Jost, who's a very well-respected expert, had a post this morning reminding everybody that the House held 79 hearings over the course of a year in 2009 when the Affordable Care Act was being developed, heard from 181 witnesses, and debated 121 amendments. And even in that process, it was difficult. We don't know if this is going to be developed in a matter of weeks, as House Republicans have promised. It's hard to imagine that this law will get the same level of scrutiny.
Noam Levy, national healthcare correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Appreciate your time. We're talking about the future of American healthcare and the Republicans' big new proposal. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're speaking this hour about the future of healthcare in America now that the Republicans have rolled out their new plan. You can join the conversation. Does the Republican plan look too much like Obamacare? Not enough. What's your question for our panel today about your coverage? In an interview with Fox News, Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan denied the new healthcare bill is simply a reined-in version of the Affordable Care Act.
It's going to be a fight with people who want Obamacare. We got a choice to make. Do we want to keep Obamacare or do we want to repeal and replace Obamacare? The president has been extremely clear that we're going to repeal and replace it with a better system that gives people choice and competition that's
not
run by government.
Obamacare
where people get freedom.
And here's Democratic House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi in an interview with CBS News saying the new health care bill proposed by Republicans lacks important details and would cause millions to lose their health insurance.
This will make millions of people. It's a question of 10, 15, 20 million people off of having health insurance. It will be the biggest transfer of wealth from low and middle income people to wealthy people in our country. You don't think of it that way. That's why we say to them, show us the numbers. Show us the numbers about what the impact is personally on people. Show us the numbers as to how many people will be thrown off. It couldn't be worse.
Joining me now in Ann Arbor, Michigan, is Jonathan Cohn, senior national correspondent for the Huffington Post, where he covers healthcare, social welfare, and politics. He's the author of Sick, The Untold Story of America's Healthcare Crisis and the People Who Pay the Price. Jonathan, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me on the show.
And in New York is Paul Howard, senior fellow and director of health policy at the Manhattan Institute. He was part of the Romney campaign's healthcare policy advisory group. Paul, welcome to you. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having me on.
I'll start with you, Paul. We just heard Nancy Pelosi say this plan would make 10 million people at least lose their coverage. What do you say? Do you agree?
Well, I think that there's one serious concern that Republicans need to address in the law. I think one of the challenges with the ACA is that the subsidies at the lower income end were very generous. but the structure of the law raised costs for young and healthier enrollees, and so we've seen a really sharp drop-off in enrollment above about 150% of the federal poverty level on the exchanges. So a lot of these people are sitting it out and driving the cost increases we're seeing. The Republicans are trying to hit a sweet spot of offering more support to people who have middle-income arrangements and give them more affordable policies while keeping protections at the low end. I think moving to more of a means-tested approach for the credits that are in the law right now would help assuage some of those concerns. There's $100 billion in the law for something called the Patient and State Stability Fund that could help address some of these concerns, could be used by states for things like reinsurance, cost-sharing subsidies, et cetera. If they bumped that up a bit, that might get them a bigger score and also help to blunt premium increases, lowering the cost of providing those subsidies. Mm.
Jonathan Cohn, Speaker Ryan said that this plan will increase competition and give consumers more choice. Do you agree with that? Is that how you see this?
You know, this is a line we hear a lot from the Republicans that their plans would increase choice and increase freedom. And by that, what they mean is the government will be providing less regulation, will be imposing fewer rules on the insurance industry. But, you know, those rules actually open up freedom for people. I mean, if you remember what healthcare was like before the Affordable Care Act, if you had a pre-existing condition, you could not buy insurance because an insurance company would not sell it to you. If you did not have enough money on your own to pay for coverage, you could not pay for policy. You did not have the ability to get coverage. So you really had no freedom. In general, what the law has done is it has provided millions of people with the opportunity to get insurance they never had. So that is expanding choice. And in addition to that, it has set up a marketplace where really for the first time people can comparison shop. I mean, people, if you talk to people who used to buy health insurance in the old system, it was a nightmare because you never knew what you were buying. The benefits weren't standard. You didn't know how to compare plans. The new system has plenty of complications. It is far from perfect. But when you go on healthcare.gov, you do get a kind of nice, neat summary of what the plans do. They divide them into levels, silver, bronze, gold. So you have some rough idea of what's going to be covered. And I think, you know, even conservatives can like that because, you know, that's how you create a marketplace, allowing people to actually shop for the first time.
Here's an interview with Fox and Friends yesterday where Republican Kentucky Senator Rand Paul said this about the Obamacare replacement plan, which he calls Obamacare Lite.
Premiums and prices will continue to spiral out of control. In fact, they acknowledge it in their own bill by putting an insurance company bailout, $100 billion at least in insurance company bailouts because the marketplace is still broken. They end up leaving the individual mandate. They do nothing to help the consumer join associations to bring prices down.
So, you know, he also said united on repeal, divided on replace. Paul Howard, I remember Republicans once upon a time saying we want a bipartisan plan, something that at least some Democrats can get behind. Any Democratic support here? Any votes at all moving this forward?
Well, you know, I don't see it at this point in time. I mean, I think that the Republicans are in, you know, a bit of a political bind, which is they've promised doing this. They're under tremendous pressure to do this quickly. The only pathway they have to move forward on this right now, given the current politics, is through this reconciliation procedure, which ironically was the way that the Affordable Care Act finally passed back in 2010. So they're taking the same path. And, of course, the Democrats couldn't get any Republican support for their version of the bill. And we could have a he said, she said about, you know, whether or not that was even possible at the time. I think the bottom line, though, is a lot of the regulations actually that the Republicans would need to get at to help bring down some costs, and Jonathan could, you know, dispute whether or not that would be a valuable effort, they're going to have to bring Democrats back into this process. There's no way they can get a lot of this done without 60 votes. So this is going to be a down payment on some of the reforms, and they're going to have to find a way at some point to bring those 8 Democratic votes back in.
So the average American, I think, wants to know what to expect with all this. Let's try to explain some of it. Noam Levy talked about the tax credits in this new plan to try to induce people to buy insurance on the open market. These tax credits are a real problem for conservative Republicans who see them as just another entitlement program. Jonathan Cohen, is it?
Well, I mean, you know, whether you call it an entitlement program, do you call Medicare an entitlement program? Do you call Social Security an entitlement program? Seems to me, you know, if you do, then yes, this is an entitlement program. And some people don't even think that's a bad word. The key difference to remember, the tax credits are really important, and it's easy to get lost in the jargon, age-based, income-based. Here's the key distinction between what the Affordable Care Act does with its tax credits and what Republicans are proposing to do now. The Affordable Care Act, the goal here is to guarantee access to a certain level of benefits. So the government basically says, look, we're going to look at how much money you make. We're going to look at what it costs to get a decent insurance policy where you live. And we are going to give you enough assistance so that you have to pay some for this insurance policy, but we will cover the rest so that it's within your reach. The Republican plan is basically a flat tax credit. It is the same no matter what your income is. It is the same no matter where you live. It does get a little bigger for age, so that does tend to mitigate the effects a little bit. But the basic bottom line is that, you know, if you are somebody, your income is low, or you live somewhere where your insurance costs are very high, you're going to be stuck. You're not going to be able to get that policy. Conversely, we're going to spend a lot of money, the federal government's going to spend a lot of money giving a tax break to people who already can afford health insurance. Now, that's not necessarily the end of the world, and you know, there are virtues, other virtues to the Republican system, which it's simpler to administer. But at the end of the day, the Democratic tax system is a way to guarantee people that there will be enough money to buy, you know, what the law defines as a sort of decent health insurance policy. And the Republican plan does not make that guarantee, and that is a big reason why it's going to leave so many more people without health insurance. Mm.
Paul Howard, what about the penalty in this new plan, up to 30% for allowing your insurance to lapse? Is that essentially replacing an Obamacare penalty for not having insurance with a new penalty for an insurance lapse?
It's an attempt to effectively do the same thing while recognizing that the Obamacare mandate was deeply unpopular. So they're trying to find a way to walk a relatively narrow line here. I think probably the 30% penalty for 1 year, versus a normal premium is probably too little and is going to continue to, you know, encourage younger, healthier people to sit out the market. So I think that needs to be strengthened to give people a bigger incentive to walk in, but it's an alternative. And I think, you know, probably the right answer is, you know, to work with HHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, and insurers to find, you know, a balance here. But maybe something that's, you know, a one-year penalty or 150% of the premium, something that had a bit more teeth in it to encourage people to get coverage and hold coverage is the right way to go. Mm.
So Noam Levy at the beginning talked about the Medicaid changes, the rollback for federal aid. He's talked about a formula that's going to change, which adds caps for how much the federal government pays states for Medicaid reimbursement. Jonathan Cohen, I'm curious, over time, does that force states to scale back coverage then to poorer people?
Most likely, yes. It's a little bit I'm hedging just a little bit because the early drafts of the bill that everybody saw used one formula, and the most recent draft, the one that's going to be, that's going before Congress now, used a different formula for the cap, and it's a more generous form. So it doesn't appear that the cut that is in the legislation at the moment, at least, is quite as steep. But it does appear that it's a cut over time, that over time states would be getting less money than they would under current law. And, you know, if that happens, one way or another, the states are going to have to make it up. And a lot of states, what they're going to do, they're either going to stop offering Medicaid to as many people, or they're going to pay providers less. And Medicaid already pays rock bottom prices, which is, you know, one of the program's problems, frankly, or they're going to cover fewer services. And it's important to remember, you know, the image, the stereotype of a Medicaid recipient, is a sort of, you know, working age adult. You get some people say, oh, they're all lazy. Actually, most of them are working. But put that aside, Medicaid is the largest payer of nursing home services in this country. There are a lot of elderly, a lot of disabled who depend on that program. So when we say that states might have to cut Medicaid, it is quite possibly down the road. We are looking at cuts for the elderly and the disabled one way or another.
So how, Paul Howard, do you make states accountable for those who are most vulnerable?
Well, you know, I think that Jonathan's right, that the current draft is actually relatively generous. This originally was, and not to say that this means the Democrats will embrace it, but this was actually proposed that President Clinton put forward, I think, back in 1995 as a response to Republicans' original proposal for block grants. So separating out categories of Medicaid enrollees, using historical spending beginning in 2016 to set these categorical amounts that the states would get and having them grow not just at medical inflation but medical inflation plus one, which actually Medicaid hasn't grown that quickly in a while in a lot of states, does give states some breathing room there. I think the reasonable objection to this approach is, what happens when a new technology, like a new drug for hepatitis C or maybe a vaccine for HIV, comes on the market and there's a one big year, you know, increase, I think that's actually a place where you can have some innovative payment reforms that would talk to the states or give the states freedom to pick up these technologies quickly. But I think this is a reasonable approach. We also see across the country, wealthier states just spend more. They have more eligibility and more services, like New York. And I think setting a floor and giving aid based on categories will actually bring more states up to a common standard than the current system.
A lot of listeners want to get in here. Let me go first to Linda in Wimberley, Texas. Hi, Linda. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. What puts me on is I'm just very concerned about the whole healthcare situation. It's a great conversation. And my questions concern cost and clarity. I'm very concerned about the cost because if they're going to push it off onto the states with all the economic catastrophe of the last 8 years or 10 years, how are the states going to guarantee that they're going to be able to cover anything? And while I think it's a travesty that the Democrats ran Hillary and not Bernie, the upside might be that this will push us more and more toward people really getting out there and screaming for universal health care. Mm-hmm. And what I find interesting is that Trump mentioned during the campaign that he was going to go after pharmaceutical companies. And so my question is, I'm not hearing one thing about that. And why are Americans one of the two countries in the world that pay so much for pharmaceuticals? And why do taxpayers pay billions so pharmaceutical companies can advertise? So
got it.
Our health costs, I find it, yeah, okay.
Two big points. Linda, thank you. I really appreciate your call. The cost keeps coming back here, Paul Howard. It is the elephant in the room. The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, this nonpartisan group needs to weigh in here. When will we hear that? What do you expect?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, Jonathan was right. I expect, you know, sometime, hopefully next week, we'll get the score. And it's important to have that score. You can you know, dispute the, CBO's methodology at some points, but it's important to have some kind of neutral baseline. Look, costs are the elephant in the room, no matter who we're talking about here. The ACA was largely a coverage expansion with some cost control pilots on the side. Costs are rising again. Some of these Republican reforms here are an attempt to do this. The ACA tried to do similar things through things like not paying for readmissions for hospitals, which have actually helped to bend the curve, but the curve is shooting back up. So that is, you know, the place where states and the federal government still need to go. Republicans' approach is more of a market-driven approach. The one thing I'd caution here is we're talking mostly about the ACA for this part of it, Medicaid expansion, and the individual private exchanges, which is about 7% of the population. So I think that actually we've moved to a point in the country where our political debate is, okay, how do we cover these people? We're going to have a dispute about maybe the exact mechanism, but I think both sides are now saying we've got to cover these people. That is a very different place perhaps than we were in 2009.
Jonathan Cohn, quickly, Linda wanted to know about Big Pharma and the cost of drugs. President Trump talked a lot about that during the campaign. What's in here regarding that issue?
Well, there's nothing in here regarding that issue. I do think it will be interesting to find out if that comes up. I mean, that was, you know, someplace where Donald Trump occasionally sounded like Bernie Sanders, you know. And now, you know, Donald Trump being Donald Trump, sometimes he sounded very different. It's never been clear to me when he talks about, he says, we want to bargain with, you know, drug companies. Does that mean that the government's going to bargain with them like they do in Europe? Or does that mean Donald Trump, CEO, is going to sit across the table and say, you know, lower your price or I'm going to tweet at you? Which, by the way, is generally, I think, not a very effective way to bring down, you know, the price of a good. But actually, the nature of prescription drugs, you do get occasionally, you know, one or two drugs that are so expensive. You know, who knows? Maybe that would work. But we haven't heard a lot of that lately. And, you know, I think it speaks to the broader issue, which is that Donald Trump, you know, ran around saying, we're going to cover everybody, we're going to have this great healthcare system. You can, you know, I think the Republican plan is perfectly defensible on its own merits, you know, if you have certain values. But what it is not is a program to cover everybody. And that disconnect between the promises that Donald Trump made and a lot of Republicans made, that we're going to give you every, you know, we're going to improve healthcare for people, and what they're actually proposing, that is at the root of the problem they have right now.
So Health and Human Services Secretary Dr. Tom Price, yesterday in the press conference rolling all this out, talked about the number of insurers on the exchange. 232 last year, 167 now. That's a loss of 30% in 1 year. Paul Howard, quickly, before we go to break here in about 30 seconds, do you think this new plan will bring stability to what appears to be a collapsing insurance market?
I think if they make some tweaks to the plan as it's currently presented, they can help to reassure insurers that this is going to be a stable market in the future. Are additional reforms going to be needed? Absolutely. But the way to think about this is reforms are going to be needed probably every few years for this market because people cycle in and out of it. It's a residual market. So just getting the basics right actually just opens up the opportunity to keep fixing it as you go along.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Relationships are important. Cooking together builds strong family bonds, and Blue Apron makes cooking together fun and easy. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. So join in, get the family together, and choose your meals each week. They come to your door with pre-measured ingredients so you can spend time with your family and not at the grocery store. With the simple instructions, everyone can help prepare the meal. There's no risk. Get your first 3 meals free, plus free shipping, by visiting Blue Apron. .com/OP.
Hi, it's Tom. I'm glad you're listening to this On Point podcast. Really happy to have you here. You know, a lot of people barely know podcasts exist. They've never listened to one. Here at On Point, we want to change that. All this month, we're inviting our listeners to tell a friend about a podcast they love. Do it in real life or on social media, and make sure you let us know what you're recommending. Tell us using the hashtag TryPod. That's hashtag TryPod. And thanks.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're digging into the new Republican plan to replace the Affordable Care Act, and you can join the conversation. Who wins and who loses if this new plan becomes law? As we've mentioned, the Republican health care plan unveiled on Monday did not come with a Congressional Budget Office cost estimate. White House Office of Management and Budget head Mick Mulvaney told NBC's The Today Show yesterday morning that he's not at all worried about that just yet.
We will know what it costs before they vote on it. And in fact, I don't think they can vote on it on the floor without the CBO number coming in. But I think everybody who's looked at it knows that this is going to save a dramatic amount of money. Once you repeal the mandate in Obamacare, you repeal the taxes in Obamacare, you repeal the penalties in Obamacare, you get out of that government-centric system, the CBO score is going to be very positive and helpful long-term.
And speaking at the Senate yesterday, Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said the Republican health care repeal bill would be a disaster for the American people.
Now, it's near certainty that this bill will cause millions to lose insurance and blow a gigantic hole in the federal budget. So it's reckless, irresponsible for Republicans to make Congress vote on this mess of a plan before we have those answers from CBO. Simply put, Trump care is a mess for the American people. We Democrats will fight it tooth and nail.
We're speaking this hour with Jonathan Cohn, senior national correspondent for the Huffington Post, and Paul Howard, senior fellow and director of health policy at the Manhattan Institute. Joining me now in Washington is Karen Tumulty, national correspondent for the Washington Post. Her latest piece is "The Debate Over the Affordable Care Act is Really a Debate Over Wealth Distribution." You can link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. Karen, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Great to be here, Jane.
So House Speaker Paul Ryan says that he will muscle this plan through the House. What do you think? Can he get the 218 votes he needs to get this through?
I think it's looking very much in question now. The amount of opposition that is coming out, not only on Capitol Hill, but from conservative media you can understand why he wants to move so quickly, because it is definitely building. And as you said, this CBO score is a crucial part of the picture, because it will give us an idea not only of the cost of this plan, but what it does to coverage, what it does to the kind of scope and depth of health care, mm-hmm. and also how many people get covered.
Mm. What about the Senate? That's the House. What about the Senate?
I'm sure the Senate is very happy right now to let the House go first and see what happens.
Tell me, why did they rush into this? Seems like they went all in right out of the gate, just like Obama did in his first term.
Because this is the kind of issue where the longer it goes, the more complicated it gets, the more difficult it gets. And don't forget that Obama, it did take him a couple of years to get this through, and it also was pretty dicey there at the end.
Mm. Does the CBO score, the Congressional Budget Office score, even matter at this point? I mean, we have so many on both sides that are stepping up, sort of slamming this without really even knowing the details. Does that matter? Do people have their minds made up?
Yes, because this what the CBO score is going to be an assessment from an independent, supposed, you know, a non-biased arbitrator here, so that it will not be a bunch of ideologues and politicians screaming talking points at each other. This is going to be based on the data. You know, there are problems with the way CBO scores things in that they have to go by their rules, and sometimes their rules don't always allow them to get the most realistic point of view. But it is going to be the closest thing we have to an independent evaluation of this piece of legislation.
Let's get some listeners in here. Debbie in Midway, Georgia. Hi, Debbie. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane, and thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
One comment.
Okay.
Affordable Care Act, my insurance has gone from $1,100 a month to $1,600 a month in the last 3 years. And the difference is my girlfriend pays $38 a month for the exchange. Everything that she has had done in the last year has been covered 100%. None of my physicians will take the insurance plan that my broker has put me on. So right now, I feel, and I'm sure there's a lot of Americans who feel, that we are footing the bill. Taxpayer notwithstanding, I have to pay for everybody else's care.
So are you excited about this new plan, Debbie? What do you think about it?
So, because I think the last 3 years has been a disaster for me personally and for my business and for people who are in my same position. My question is, I hear nothing about monitoring or regulating the insurance companies for what they're doing. Like I said, none of my physicians are taking this. I have to try and find a different plan now when there's not open enrollment. So I have to either divorce my husband or change my business plan in order to have a life-changing event.
Got it. I'm glad you called, Debbie. Thank you. Jonathan Cohen, I'll turn that to you. $1,100 to $1,600, costs are up. Doctors are not accepting the exchange. I mean, talk about regulating and monitoring the insurance companies here.
Well, I mean, there's the new Republican bill will not monitor the insurance companies. It will actually give insurance companies more freedom, which can cut either way. I mean, it gives them freedom to offer cheaper coverage potentially. It also gives them freedom to charge more. You know, something Paul said earlier, which I thought was right on, and I think people on left and right agree with this, is that when you look at who the law has worked really well for, you lower income populations, the way the law works out with the subsidies and the tax credits, it works out quite well, and that's where you see the really big insurance gains. The money to sort of, you know, the law did two things, right? It made insurance better, stronger, more comprehensive, all those regulations that Noam talked about at the beginning, you know, has to cover mental health. We can't, you know, making it so that everybody can get insurance regardless of pre-existing condition. That's a really big deal, but it really raised the cost of insurance because, you know, insurers used to not cover those people. So the law said, all right, we're going to make, you know, insurance more available. We're going to make it more comprehensive. That's going to make it more expensive. So then we're also going to give people more financial assistance to offset that. And basically, I think a fair analysis of the law is that it turns out that the assistance that's being given, you know, up the income scale as you get to the middle class, upper middle class, it tapers off pretty quickly, and there's not enough there. So, I mean, you know, the answer which you know Democrats had wanted, and in some ways, you know, that you could think of ways to do this that conserve their, you know, it was basically to get a little more money into the system for people like that caller. $1,600 you know, a month is a lot. Now, insurance is expensive. And, you know, part of the problem here is very few people understand actually how much insurance really costs. But $1,600 is a lot. So how do you get that price down is the question. And the key is, how do you get that price down without making insurance less comprehensive? How do you do it without making it less available to people?
Here's an interview on CNN yesterday where Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz said Americans will need to make financial decisions that prioritize health care.
We're getting rid of those things that people said that they don't want. And you know what? Americans have choices, and they've got to make a choice. And so maybe rather than getting that new iPhone that they just love and they want to go spend hundreds of dollars on that, maybe they should invest it in their own health care. They've got to make those decisions themselves.
Chaffetz later tried to explain that remark, saying that he believes in conscious choice and in self-reliance. Paul Howard, what do you make of all that?
That was an unfortunate quote, and I'm sure that Representative Chaffetz realized that right after it came out of his mouth. I mean, the cost of an iPhone is not for the populations that we're talking about here. I mean, the market this market, this individual insurance market, is composed of people who are what are called high utilizers. They have serious chronic illnesses. They were priced out of insurance before or could only afford it with great hardship. You're trying to help those people. And it's also composed of people who are young and healthy and very cost sensitive. And some of them are saying, you know, this kind of insurance for me is just not worth it because I don't spend that much money on healthcare every year. So you have to address both of those. One of the more elegant ways to do it is just subsidize the high purchasers and let prices vary for the healthier people. So let those prices come down, but simply buy the chronically ill, really low-income people into the market. There are other ways to do that directly, more directly. I think that Republicans, you know, might agree on that. Democrats might agree on reinsurance as one strategy to do that. So you can allow prices to float for healthy people while simply subsidizing the higher-cost users.
Let's get Aaron in here from Bangor, Maine. Hi, Aaron. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'm a single parent who works three jobs. I go to school full-time, and I have a child with a pre-existing condition who is going to be becoming an adult very soon,
okay.
Which I'm not available to afford his medication, and I know he will not be. The comment was made that there's a lot of pressure on Republicans to make a change, and I don't believe that that's true. I believe what, in fact, is being asked in town halls and when people say they're going to muscle this through is coverage that is controlled, that is providing coverage for everyone despite their income level or their needs, their medical needs, not what this knee-jerk reaction seems to be that does not regulate pretty much anything for anybody who is low income or the regulation of insurance companies themselves.
So even though your son would be covered with this pre-existing condition, you do not support this new plan?
I do not.
Aaron, thanks so much. Cheryl in New Orleans, Louisiana, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, hi, Jane. I want to make two points. One is that a lot of people that are on the exchanges or have the Medicaid expansion are people who work maybe multiple jobs because they're part-time. And because they're part-time employees, they don't get health insurance through their employer. Okay, that's one thing. And also, even if they are full-time, a lot of them are bare minimum, minimum wage or barely above that. So they you know, don't have a living wage, if you will. So they have the Medicaid expansion or the exchanges. So a tax credit once a year is not going to help them with their monthly, bill.
Mm-hmm,
and the other thing I want to bring up real quickly here is that my husband is a federal employee, okay? So he has great health insurance. He has low premium and an affordable deductible,
yep.
Okay? And why can't I know that a lot of these senators, in fact, all of the senators and all of the congressmen have that type of
plan. You want the same kind of plan. I hear that. Cheryl, thank you so much. You do hear that a lot, Paul Howard. I do want to throw this back to you, though. The requirement for the larger employers in this plan to offer coverage to their full-time employees is eliminated, right, in this new plan. Bottom line, this is really more oriented to the free market. Would you say that?
It is. I mean, I think the employer mandate really didn't get you much. You look at firms with more than 500 people, the 90% of them or something like that offer coverage. It's nearly universal. It's really the small firms, as your caller said, you know, small firms that don't have enough capital to offer this insurance. You know, this is the place where you do need some support. So, you know, I don't think it gets you much. So it's really subsidies you need to buy these people into the market. What we did find out through the Affordable Care Act, and CBO estimated that a lot of people would drop coverage from employer coverage to go into the market, or employers would drop them out. That didn't happen. And I think that one thing both sides should recognize is employer coverage is really popular. It's very sticky. Of course, businesses love to be able to offer that as a competitive advantage. That's going to stick around. So the part of the market we need to stabilize is a relatively small part of the market, and we should do our best not to disrupt the employer market because it's going to require a lot bigger costs and a lot more regulation. Mm.
Karen Tumulty, jump back in here. It took almost an entire session of Congress to pass Obamacare. What's the timetable for all of this?
Well, Paul Ryan is trying to do this very quickly. He is talking about possibly a vote on the floor within a week. And again, this Congressional Budget Office report that we were talking about is probably going to land very close to that debate. So It's very quick. I am really going to be interested in seeing to what degree the White House helps out on this, to what degree the president helps out beyond tweeting and issuing statements saying that he supports the bill. Ultimately, the way this has worked in the past, at least, is that there has had to be a fair amount of presidential and White House involvement down in the weeds, talking to individual members, you know, what's it going to take for you to go for this bill? Whether Paul Ryan can do this himself, I don't know, but it can't be done just from the bully pulpit.
In just a couple of seconds here, Karen Tumulty, you wrote a piece in the Washington Post that said the debate over the Affordable Care Act is really a debate over wealth distribution. How so?
Well, wealth distribution, of course, is a very radioactive phrase in politics. And the healthcare debate always in the background has been about that. You know, what do we give to the weakest in our society, and what do the wealthier people have to pay for it? But it's always been in the background. This time, because for the first time we're talking about taking away an existing federal program and replacing it with something else, that is now front and center of the debate. It's going to be a lot about tax breaks for rich people and increased burdens on poor and elderly and sick people.
Paul Howard, do you see this whole thing as just a first iteration? We're going to go round and round here till we get something, or till the Republicans get something that they think can pass?
Well, you know, I expect that this bill is going to be changed in markup. You know, to Karen's point, you know, the president at some point is going to have to get involved and, you know, make the case. I would say, you know, to put it mildly, the president is not a terribly ideological person on this issue, and that he needs to get involved and say, look, this is important to me. It's important to these districts that I carried. You know, but again, this is through the reconciliation process. Some things you can do here, some things you can't. You're going to have to go back later to get other things. That requires some Democratic support. Thinking strategically about how you're going to do that is really some leadership, some vision from the White House that needs to come out.
And Jonathan Cohn, I'll give you the last word here. What do you think we're going to end up with?
I don't know. I think the question ultimately comes down to this is politically so difficult. The differences between the two ends of the Republican Party, the different interest groups, the mismatch between what they've promised and what they're proposing. The Republicans have the votes to pass this, but they will have to invest an enormous amount of time. There'll be an opportunity cost. There will be political pain during and after. And I think Republicans need to decide, how badly do they want this outcome, and are they willing to give it up? And that's what this will turn on.
Stay tuned. A terrific panel. Thank you very much to all of you. Jonathan Cohn, Senior National Correspondent for The Huffington Post. Thanks, Jonathan, very much.
Thank you.
Paul Howard, Senior Fellow and Director of Health Policy at the Manhattan Institute. Paul, thanks for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And Karen Tumulty, National Correspondent for The Washington Post. Thanks so much, Karen.
Appreciate it.
You can continue the conversation. Listeners, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, WikiLeaks strikes again, this time revealing CIA hacking secrets. We'll unpack all of that and consider whether privacy is dead. That's coming up tomorrow. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.